There's a thousand further women living down there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with a Dish. This is John Katsalamidis. I write the Cats Report in the Las Vegas Sun, lasvegassun.com. I write for Las Vegas Weekly, all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including the news magazine The Sunday, which comes out on The Sunday, except when it comes out on...
The Saturday.
Joining me...
First time in a long time we've gotten that right.
I think it's the first time we've actually pulled that off.
Yes!
Period, as the girl said. So anyway, how are you doing?
I'm doing
good. Trish McCrone.
Yes, and you know...
Trish McCrone? Did I get the name out?
No, you didn't, but that's okay. Okay, you can introduce me now.
Trisha McCrone.
Hi, Cass.
Or Patricia McCrone, as published
McCrone.
Accounts will indicate.
There you go. Only
what
if
is
you
happening?
Want to know my real age. Mm-hmm. I obviously was gone. We talked about that last week, mm-hmm. that I was on my travels good things and not fun things.
Yep.
But now that I am back, we really kind of had a Cats with the Dish weekend. We saw each other Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, we hung out all weekend.
Three
that hasn't
three.
Happened in so long.
I know. It requires you to be in the same city.
Yes,
to do
that's
that.
True. Oh, that's the problem.
Being there, metaphysically doesn't always work. But
I'm always in your heart.
Absolutely, that's
and
what
you're
I mean.
Always in
that's
mine.
When you're in
yes,
my heart, but you're exactly. sometimes in my heart.
But we were physically in the same space.
Yeah, so we went to we got to see a couple of shows that I'm very fond of, and
me too.
Was happy to have you see. Finally, the Showstoppers, Steve Wynn's Showstoppers at Wynn Las Vegas, and Frank the Man the Music. Over at the Venetian, we saw how do we do this? We did Frank first.
Yes, okay,
and then Showstoppers.
This is funny. So I'd known Bob Anderson for a lot of years because mm-hmm. of his friendship with Wayne Newton,
exactly.
and because of you just breaking equipment. I'm kidding. He kind of just did, but that we've known, and also the Stardust. He was in. He was like they had made a show about the convention area when Wayne was in the big room.
Is that how that? I was wondering where he performed in the Stardust because they had that kind of. They had the lounge bar.
Yeah,
that
no,
was
they
on
actually
its way
made
the
an
showroom.
Additional room like out of a the convention
okay,
rooms, and
okay.
then I think he might have gone in the big room when Wayne was out a couple times, but. But when Wayne, but he was physically on the same property, so we would run into him.
Those are some times at the Stardust, weren't they?
Oh, some of the most fun of my Vegas memories.
I love the Stardust. That's where we actually personally met, was
yes.
at the Stardust in the theater.
It yeah. was. It's mm-hmm. kind of like our place.
That's our place, now, which is now
and now it's rubble.
A skeleton.
So we can just kind of stand there on our anniversary every year.
Yeah.
So I hadn't seen Bob Anderson since then. Mm-hmm. And he walks out on stage. First of all, I was just absolutely blown away by the amount of musicians.
Yeah.
Up there. There was like 30?
34.
Yeah.
In Bob's show.
Incredible.
I think is where it is. It's between 30 and 35.
I did like kind of a quick count. I think I got mm-hmm. it was like 30 or 32.
Dave Loeb is the music
sure
director.
You're right. Yeah.
A whole, everybody top of the line on
it
that
It was
show.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then when he came out, he doesn't look anything like Bob Anderson.
Oh,
and having
he does
read
not.
Your article, I did know the brilliantly done, by the way, brilliantly written.
Thank you.
Piece that you did about all the hours that it takes for him to get, you know, the prosthetics and everything that it takes for him to get ready to actually turn into Frank.
It's an amazing process.
But I got to, mm-hmm. I have to tell you what was crazy. Yes, I mean, it was very, very cool. And I kind of have a weird thing with people that do impressions. I love it, but after about 10, 15 minutes, I'm kind of over it.
Mm-hmm. It's not everybody's thing.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves impersonators.
But I appreciate it and I understand it, but I just kind of have a shelf life, just like I did with Stomp or just like I did with a lot of those mm-hmm. other shows. Then I'm like, if you tick tack on one more thing, I'm going to lose my mind. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not my thing.
Right.
You know, and so just like musicals aren't a lot of people's thing.
Exactly.
We
all have your wheel.
Yeah, we all have our thing.
Ventriloquists, not necessarily my thing.
Yeah.
I think ventriloquism is to me as impersonators or impressionists are to you. You recognize, I could go to Terry Fader's show.
Talent.
Brilliant.
Talent, yes.
I absorb it in a way that's more intellectual than emotional.
Yeah.
You know, I understand it's difficult to do, but I'm not carried away. And that's just a personal taste.
Yeah, exactly.
Issue.
And I mean, whereas this was so different because I didn't feel like there was an impersonation going on because he wasn't Bob Anderson. He was so transformed that it's kind of like, I guess it's an homage, a tribute, whatever it is. But he is literally Frank Sinatra from the time he walks off the stage until when he leaves, which is so different than just doing an impression. It's another level.
It is. I feel like it's and watching this whole process, it's almost like a Broadway theater piece in a way where he's performing a character. It's a concert. It's a tribute act.
It's almost like performance art.
Yeah, it is that. It's a musical experience.
Yeah, the music is phenomenal. It's a scripted experience.
Bob never comes out of character.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I mean everything's. He never.
Somebody will yell his name. I heard that guy is pretty good too, Bob Anderson.
Yeah.
And you might see him later in the lounge. You know, like as Sinatra would, which is a bad impression of Frank Sinatra, by the way.
But please. Only impersonate your grandmother.
Or Robin.
Or Robin Lee. So, I was very much taken aback by, you know, just how I forgot 100% that it was Bob Anderson. But what something that was very interesting was we had a group of women who are older. I would say they're about a decade older than us.
You talk about the crew up front?
Yes, up front. And they were drinking their groove.
I think age, they're in at least our age division and beyond. They're not kids.
Yeah, they were a little bit older than us. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
They weren't kids.
And these women were acting like, oh, that was sweet. These kids are acting like they were like it was the Beatles. I mean, these girls were getting out. I mean, they were just standing, screaming, I love you, like trying to get kisses. I mean, it was... I wonder if they got that it wasn't Frank Sinatra.
You know, it was funny watching them because they felt like, I felt like they felt like they were at the Monterey Pop Festival or something.
Yeah, it was so bizarre.
And it was funny because
it was so great to watch.
They added to the experience. And I think Bob and his character was having a tough time staying in that character because of these three women are drinking champagne, they're toasting. I mean, when he went into Fly Me to the Moon, they went off.
And they're like, come talk to us. Like they wanted one-on-one. Yeah.
Leaning on the stage, which is a no-no. And the way this theater is designed, folks, is it's a proper theater at the back, but it's an old, almost kind of sans copa room vibe in the front with two rows of white linen-covered tables and plushy round chairs around them, four to a table, and red candles. And it's really cool. It's a very cool thing.
Yeah. Well, then, I mean, but then afterwards was even greater because we finished, the show was over and I had friends in town from Florida that I was just with both in Montana last summer and then in Florida for the Bud Paxton's Memorial. And so they were in town for a convention, Rhonda and Tom, I'm giving them a shout out, and they met us with a couple of their friends. And at the lounge outside. Well, all of a sudden, you had been in contact with Bob Anderson. Yeah. He comes out, probably it was about an hour or so after the show.
It was a while. I thought we had missed him.
Yeah, so the crowd had sort of thinned. And so it was great catching up and we were talking to him. All of a sudden, the lounge band calls up Bob. And basically, it's an audience of 10 and we are 6. And he starts doing a Sinatra song. And we all get up and we're all slow dancing. It was so cute. And then he does The Way You Look Tonight as Frank Sinatra.
As Tony Bennett,
which was incredible, as Dean Martin. Then it went to Wayne. Then it went to Sammy Davis Jr. And then to Tom Jones. And it was a class. How to be an impressionist. Everything about the man changed. His visual, his everything changed. And to me, I could watch something like that, you know, for a long time. It was just he literally did a show for 10 people in the lounge.
And he will do that. And it was as much fun as the actual performance.
It was really so great.
Crazy.
So, and he's going to be our guest in the next couple weeks.
Next couple weeks we'll have him.
Huge thank you to Bob Anderson because you really did make our Friday night interesting. Yeah. And to find out about the rest of their weekend, we will I guess we'll finish that after our break, right?
Yeah, we're going to turn it over for a couple of minutes and 30 seconds to our friend and my colleague, Josh Bell, who's going to talk about movies, and then we're going to come back. So stick around. I know we will.
Hi, this is The Gazillionaire.
And this is Penny.
And we're from Absinthe, the hit new show here in Las Vegas, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish.
Yo, yo.
You are royalty now. I'm a splice. You don't understand what that means, but I have more in common with a dog than I have with you.
I love dogs. I've always loved dogs.
That's Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum in Jupiter Ascending, the latest from sibling filmmakers Andy and Lana Wachowski. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. This convoluted, overstuffed sci-fi epic from the Matrix filmmakers boils down to another story of a chosen one who saves the world and falls in love. The Wachowskis remain impressive stylists, and Jupiter Ascending is quite an achievement in world-building, with dazzlingly ornate costumes, sets, and special effects. If the movie were just as accomplished in its plotting and character development, it would be brilliant, but instead it's a stunning, wildly creative book cover with a mediocre story inside. I give Jupiter Ascending 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is the animated The SpongeBob Movie, Sponge Out of Water.
Mr. Krabs, I'm telling you, he's innocent.
What are you gonna do, Krabs? Pour hot oil on me? Or put bamboo shoots under my nails?
No. Knock, knock.
Knock, knock, jokes. I can do this all day, Krabs.
The second movie, starring animated undersea creature SpongeBob SquarePants, features all the familiar characters from the Nickelodeon series in an adventure to track down the stolen recipe for Krabby Patties. The story drags over the course of 90 minutes, with mild humor and a strained climax that mixes the animated characters with live action. It would probably have been more tolerable as a half-hour TV episode. I give the SpongeBob movie Sponge Out of Water 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva.
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is nobody.
I know, it's us. I love that we do this every once in a while.
Every once in a while, we because of how our schedule works or doesn't work, in my midst, we go solo. And we've been talking about some of the shows we've seen. And the Bob Anderson show. I want to say something about Bob while we're still sort of on that topic. The guy who did his makeup is Kazu Tsuji.
That four times
Kazu Tsuji Lomitas. And he has been involved in many, many films and TV work. He was nominated for Academy Awards on Norbit and Click and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He's worked on Looper, Salt, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. The new Planet of the Apes franchise is his work.
Wow.
He's an absolute artist. And the lead of my story was I was watching as Bob was being made over, and it takes 2.5 hours. And I said, this is where the artist becomes the art. He was the canvas for this Kazu. And he sat there and you can't talk. You can't really there are times when you have to hold your breath. You can't move around. And the amount of discipline in both those men was remarkable to get this accomplished. And it is not a glamorous thing to watch that be done. It's almost like a medical prison. It's very enclosed. You're cloistered. It's not easy to breathe in there. You have to respect the space that they have, the two of them, to do what they do. And when he finally is finished and he looks beautiful, and he goes and puts the tux on, Bob is as happy as anybody I've seen.
Wow. And I wonder how fast he rips it off.
I know. I'm like, I was thinking, I go, Bob, you look like Sinatra. Now let's just go out afterward and see what
exactly
happens. Those women up front would have been up for it.
Exactly. Because, I looked at you and I remember saying, do they know that Frank Sinatra has since passed?
I don't know how far you want to carry the character.
Yeah, exactly. It was, that was great. And then on Saturday night, we saw Showstoppers, which I was very excited to see.
Yes. And what did you think? I don't know if we've ever really done a postmortem on either of these shows. What did you think of Showstoppers?
Have to tell you that as I mentioned before we spoke with Josh Bell for movies, I love Broadway. So, and one of the first shows that I did where I actually was a character was Hello Dolly. And they opened up with a bunch of Hello Dolly songs, which I absolutely loved. And even with the name Showstoppers, I didn't get it until I saw it. That basically in every Broadway show, or not every, hopefully, and just the successful Broadway shows, they have some numbers in the show that are just showstoppers. They are those numbers that you stand up and applaud. Those are those numbers that you walk away with when you leave the theater. So they pretty much, it's sort of like they take 2-3 songs from many very popular shows Broadway musicals, and they just do those. So it's not the acting. It's not. I mean, well, you are acting, obviously, while you're singing.
There's
and
a
performing.
Little bit of dialogue and some explaining of the numbers in the show, but it's pretty much scene to scene to scene, and it's a greatest hits package.
Yeah, which for a Broadway fan, it was a win-win. I loved it, and the performances. There was not a weak performance in the game, and I loved that. And I can't remember his name, so you're gonna have to help me. Who was in the Fat Pack?
Oh, Randall Keith.
Yes.
Yeah. Also in Phantom, also in Les Mis.
He was the one who I made sing a little bit of Bring Him Home when he was on the show.
That's
because
right.
Les Mis is one of my top favorite musicals of all time.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about showstoppers. There's been a lot of talk on a couple of fronts. One is, where is the audience that's going to populate the theater on a regular basis for shows of this kind? You know, that's a marketing challenge.
Yeah.
They've done whatever they've done what they can with getting the talent together and presenting it beautifully and with a great orchestra. And also about the decisions they've made with the numbers has been questioned about why is there no Les Mis? Why is there no Phantom? Why is there no contemporary musicals represented? Why is there no Wicked? Wouldn't there be a Book of Mormon number in there? And their answer is that I interviewed Phil McKinley about this, the director. They want to get to a point where everything's joyful and the same vibe all the way through. And that's why they decided on those numbers. And there was one point at the news conference after the opener where we were talking about this. I think I did ask the question about this. And McKinley and Steve Wynn both were talking about it, and they said that during the audition process that Randall sang Impossible Dream from The Man from La Mancha. Man of La Mancha. Famous, famous, famous.
Yes.
And, you know, Randall
delivered.
Place came
apart. He's a powerhouse.
Yeah, so he sings this song.
He has to contain himself so that, I mean, he can let it rip when it's time. Like, you could tell, like, he is the type of person that, has to consciously contain how big his voice is.
He's a significant, I mean, like, Wynn says he's like Pavarotti Jr.
He's
that good. So he sings.
And to be Jean Valjean, you have to be.
Yeah, and he's done it many, many, many times, many years in that role, that particular. He's also in Spamalot. At that theater. So he's got experience in that very encore theater. So he sings this song, and McKinley wants it in the show when he sings it in auditions. It might have been after. It was after auditions, but during rehearsals. And they're deciding. And Wynn says that he can't find a place for this song because he can't follow this song in the lineup of numbers that we have in this show. It will not work. You can't come back in with anything after you hear something like that. And he has a number of songs he said that about. Now, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. You know, I
he think did sing it in the show.
He didn't sing Impossible Dream in the show.
What did he sing? Yes, I think he did.
No. Not in Showstoppers. Mm-mm.
What did he come out and sing?
He sang the song from the He sang the song, his autobiographical song. It wasn't Impossible Dream, though. I'll think of it.
It was something like a new number,
brand new.
It was something like that, though.
Yeah, it was not Impossible
Dream. See, for me, I did secretly, because again, I'm a Les Mis fan, I was hoping for a little Bring Him Home.
Yeah, I would like
or
to see
Or One Day
that.
More, things like that. Like I was, you know, but again, I mean, it's, you can't please everybody. There is always going to be somebody's favorite show. There's always going to be something that's left out. There's always going to be something that you're missing.
Once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. Sorry, you are right. I'm wrong. I admit it. But
it has that. But now the fact that you think of that song being in the show kind of cuts into the argument that that song wouldn't work in the show. That Impossible Dream wouldn't. You could put Impossible Dream in that particular slot.
Absolutely.
And have it work.
Because it was his autobiographical part.
Yeah. And so that, you know, I'm wondering if they aren't. I'm wondering, as Showstoppers unfolds, if they aren't going to rethink how they've assembled the numbers in the show and the decisions they've made, because I've been told it was a purely artistic decision. They can get licensing to anything they want.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that the flow was great. The flow was good. I mean, the pacing was good of the show. Really quick, on a totally aside note, the costume people. It has been probably since, you know, Jubilee had all their, I know that they changed everything up a while back, but when Jubilee was the, you know, rhinestone heaven. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they don't have as much as they used to. It looked like when we last saw
probably
it.
Probably true.
But these costumes are so gorgeous. They're so beautiful. They're so perfectly tailored. They're so striking. And the sets, everything, the band, everything that surrounds Showstoppers is definitely Steve Wynn, high class. And I love that Steve Wynn actually narrates.
Yeah.
That also was a nice little bonus.
Well, the costume designer who has a ton of experience and now is Susie Benzinger. And she's worked on a lot.
Susie.
Blue Jasmine, whatever works, Celebrity Ghostbusters. Going back to that level. That's who's in charge. And everything's hand beaded and hand cared.
It was incredible.
How about that balloon outfit during, was it Razzle Dazzle?
Yes.
Yeah, when she comes out covered in kind of an inflated type.
And they had all the peacocks with the peacock type looking things. Oh, that was incredible. Yeah. And again, there were so many. And I love the selections that they chose. I mean, but again, There are a thousand other Broadway shows that could have been chosen, and I would have loved those selections as well.
Let me ask you, as a musical and a Broadway fan, in the first preview of Showstoppers that I was honored to attend, I was sitting right behind Wynn and Steve Lawrence at this show, and it's the first full dress rehearsal performance, Friends and Family, Lion's Den, they call it, and The end of the show, they end the show currently with one from Chorus Line.
Yes. You can't go past that.
In the preview, they do go past it. They do an encore. And did you ever see Little Abner? Little Abner, the movie? The show from which the comic strip is derived, or other way
I
around.
Have not
there was
seen
a, the comic strip, yes. Little Abner became the musical, became the TV.
Yes.
Okay. This is, okay. So we're going off a relatively obscure title, but there's a song in that show that is the end of Little Abner called The Country's in the Very Best of Hands. The Country's in the Best of Hands, the Best of Hands, the Best of Hands. And it's a
I can tell you right now, no.
Full company performance with Randall in front, everybody, Andrew, David Bernhall, everybody, all the women. Everybody on stage. And they're singing this song after one has unspooled. And the audience is like, it's a country number, it's a hayseed number. It's Wynn's personal message. He's like, is his political message. It's a sarcastic song.
It could be a political message.
It's a political message today. The actual
prior
message.
To one.
Yeah. And so they use this number and people are like, what is happening?
Yeah,
what is going on stage?
I can't think of one song that could follow up one.
I think, right? Yeah. It has to finish the show.
I mean, once you're doing the kicks, once you're doing the fan kicks in one, you know, that
circular counterclockwise.
You can't, there's nothing that's going to, in any Broadway show, I don't think there's anything that can follow that.
Well, they have this number.
That I'm glad that it was cut by the time I saw it.
That's fully presented and has been presented in a couple of shows and nowhere to put it.
There were a few of the show choices that weren't technically my favorite. I would have loved to see other things in there, but I understand that they're popular and that, you know, it's something for everybody. But a good 75% of the music that they chose, I knew I loved, and it was presented fantastically. The other stuff was presented fantastically, but maybe it was just not my type of, it wasn't one of my favorite shows.
They're working on You're the One That I Want from Greece.
Love it.
Is one of them. That'll be interesting to see in the show.
Because
Greece is I feel like it's a contemporary musical, but it is 30 years old.
Yeah.
40 years old almost now. So I guess, you know, everything seems to be of a certain era. But my favorite number in the show is Cell Block Tango.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And I've never seen that performer. Dancing, her body, her singing.
Lindsay Radzinski.
Oh, my gosh. She, to me, I mean, in some ways, she stole the show for me. She was just stunning. Like, I found myself, you know, like, just wow. After she did that, I went to her the rest of the show.
Yeah, she's, talk about legs for days.
I know. Maybe it's just my jealousy of how phenomenally talented, and her body was ridiculous. How, like, her legs, I mean, she has a Chorus Line dancer. She's it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how they built the singers into the show because, you know, the man, Randall is like the big voice. David Burnham is a very versatile guy. He does Razzle Dazzle, for example.
Yeah, he's great.
And the Money.
He also does Money. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And,
I love
and Andrew Ragone, who's going to be one of our guests next week, is kind of the, you know, he's the super, you know, heartthrob type.
Yes.
performer does Will Common from Cabaret.
Oh, that was
and
great.
Is sort of at the center of the Damn Yankees number, yes. The game. So it was intentional that they had a complimentary performers. Yes. Then you have Nicole Kaplan, who
does like kind of the femme fatale. Yeah. Type of, but like, and, you know, like the little sex bomb.
Yeah. And
sex
she comes in and adds that to it. And then you have this terrific voice of Carrie O'Malley.
Yeah. She's like the Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
I mean that mm-hmm. in like the most complimentary mm-hmm. way possible, that she is that, you know, that old school powerhouse Broadway voice,
mm-hmm.
you know, that she's just going to like knock it out of the park at 1,000 miles an hour.
It's funny how life unfolds, because I remember my entry point. I don't know if it was my entry point into Ethel Merman, but it was when I first got to know exactly who she was an Airplane. Remember that scene,
yes.
In Airplane? She's singing Everything's Coming of Roses.
That is
true.
She's
passing out in hospital.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
And I'm like, it's part of this huge comedy and she's satirizing herself. And then you grow up and you get to learn a little bit more about art and entertainment. And she's a force, you know.
Yeah,
that woman
definitely.
It was, you know, inspired a lot of people. And then here you are in Las Vegas on the Strip and you see somebody singing her songs
and
moving you. A lot of chills in that show.
And doing it well, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, and doing it very, very well. Again, you know, I'm always going to hope for Bring 'Em Home, but that's just my own personal taste in it. But then we had a switcher up in that we attended the annual Mullets Super Bowl Fest. Jeff Mullets, and I did not touch anything fried.
Mullets Fest.
I kept my diet intact.
The deep fried Oreo brownies.
Nothing deep fried. I was sitting there, a giant box of Twinkies, and did not even look at it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as Wayne would say, this party, this is the fourth year, I think, I've been to it. I think it's the fourth or maybe even fifth. Now, it's a house party, and Jeff Mullets, this is a point in the program where we ask, who's Jeff Mullets, everybody? Jeff Mullets is the personal assistant to Carrot Top.
Yes.
And he's a friend of all entertainers in town. He knows everybody. Yeah. So he has a party that is, it's like almost as if he just doesn't plan the party. He just opens up his house. They have a whole bunch of fried offerings.
Yes.
And there's always between 200 and 250 people who file in and out of this party. So yes. You go in there, you know, you see every... We run through the party and it's like Billy Johnson's there and his wife Erica. They're members of Jersey Boys there. We have Joey Fatone at this party.
Yes, and, Joey was sporting some bizarre facial hair.
Yeah, he's going to be working into the reason he's in town. He's going to be in Rock of Ages.
Yes,
beginning
but,
February 20th,
was that
folks.
The facial hair for Rock of Ages? Didn't he seem more Duck Dynasty-ish than
I think
he was?
He's got to shave that down. He's got to shave it
Didn't he look
down.
A little Duck Dynasty? He had a little more facial hair than normal going on?
Yes. On that, and speaking of Duck Dynasty, that show's coming to town too in April, ladies and gentlemen. And he's not in it. So we have Joey.
Yes. Joey Fatone, please. Come on. He was the, as a matter of fact, I just rewatched when NSYNC was at the Super Bowl.
Oh my
NSYNC
God.
NSYNC and Britney Spears.
Yeah.
That was, I have to tell you, other than Prince. 2001.
Yeah.
Other than Prince, that may have been my favorite Super Bowl halftime performance. And that I can remember because it was Aerosmith. It was
Aerosmith with Britney.
Mary J. Blige.
Yep.
It was NSYNC and Britney Spears. I mean, it was, and that was like the height of all of it.
Yeah, they were all on fire then.
Yes, and
everybody.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. The Walk This Way alone was out of control. So
that's when Britney was. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. And yes, she had that hot little football outfit on. Oh, my gosh.
That's what that kind of thing, that era made her.
And Justin Timberlake was so adorable, as he still is now.
He's still, that guy is serious.
He's amazing.
Yeah, I never thought when I was watching NSYNC that I'd
be much. He had these little gloves that had sparks shoot out of it. Yeah. I remember, like, I just rewatched it, actually.
That was 2 years before the wardrobe malfunction.
Yes, and then they stopped. That was when MTV still had it. They stopped letting MTV have the halftime show after the Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson wardrobe.
This year's was good. This year's halftime show was fun. Didn't like it. I thought it was visually really interesting. My favorite one was, I like Prince. I like Bruno Mars.
Yes, I forgot about that. And also, I'd say after 9/11, no wait, it was when
U2 was on.
U2, yes. Uh-huh. It was when they had all the names, that was powerful. When all the names, that was another.
They did that same thing on their tour, because I saw them in, I think, November of that year, of 2001. And they did the thing with the names, and then that was the January after.
Yeah, because that would have been 02. Yeah, because
it was the 02 Super Bowl, and that was it was in late 2001. Holy cow, that was at the Thomas and Mack Center. And I mean, you talk about powerful, Jesus.
Yeah, that
was
incredible.
Incredible.
But yeah, no, I love Lenny Kravitz, can do no wrong. But overall, I was a little
You know what Lenny Kravitz's oddest connection to two Las Vegas is? He designed some of the suites at SLS, his company did.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, some of the high-end suites that
he's
are upstairs.
So, he's so cool.
He was at the opening.
He is like the definition of cool.
He is. He's when the cool guys all get together.
They want to be
him. He's the cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's amazing. So I loved, anytime I get a chance to see Lenny, my life is happy. But other than that, I got to say I was kind of meh. The game was great, though.
Great game. Great game. And the Seahawks folks are going to regret the way that they handled their play calling at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I don't know. I think, and we all were saying it at the time even, and I don't understand why you have the best playoff running back maybe in history and you decide to throw the football when you're 6 feet from the end zone.
I know.
Just got done dragging three guys for 5 yards.
I understand. I know.
But our teams didn't make it, so who cares?
But speaking of controversy, something's going on with, on our very first show, one of our first guests, Holly Madison. Tell me about it, Cats.
Holly,
what's happening in town?
Oh, man. You know, I don't like lawsuit stories. Have I ever told you that? I really dislike lawsuit stories because when you start writing about lawsuits, you can't satisfy both sides' cases to their satisfaction, to their attorney's satisfaction.
Yeah,
and we've been friends with Holly for a long time. And I know the people who run 1923, they had a very good idea with her to put this club into the old Ivan Kane space last March. Long story short, Holly is now suing the people with whom she was partners in that space, allegedly because they set up video recording equipment and recording women in various states of dress and undress who were in the show, were the dancers in the show. And
was it backstage or on stage?
She's saying it was backstage. She's saying it was backstage and they're saying it was part of the surveillance system that was set up in the club anyway. And they were in areas that were not intended to be dressing areas and they were being recorded that way. Everything in the club is being recorded as far as surveillance goes. That's their case. Holly's saying something different. And the two sides obviously have been fractured for a long time. I've known that. And I thought they were going to be able to mediate this as recently as this month or last month. And they're not. So now crisscrossing lawsuits are happening at 1923.
So are they saying that they, distributed it?
Yeah, that they sent the footage to the people who ran the club and they were using it, observing
as
it.
As personal, entertainment
allegation.
To them.
Yes. Yeah, very seedy, seedy allegation. And I was just happened to be in the club last weekend, and I knew nothing of this until Monday.
Wow. Well, gosh, it's been fun catching up.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime.
I know.
Next week, we're going to have our plan is to have Nicole Kaplan and Andrew Ragone, previously name checked, as our guests. But until then, thanks, Dishy, for hanging out with us.
Thank you, Katzie.